So I wonder, did you all catch the detail in the middle of that story? The bit where Jesus sat in the temple next to the collection boxes, and he watched as the crowds dropped in their donations. Which leads me directly to sermon point number one. Jesus is watching you as you put money into that collection plate back there. Y'all best be generous. Which leads me directly into sermon point number two. Please disregard sermon point number one. Because today's story from the Gospel of Mark is not, and I can't emphasize this enough, this is not a heartwarming story about a generous giver. Rather, it is a heartbreaking story about the way religious institutions prey on the poor. So I'm going to ask you guys a question. I'm going to ask you to raise your hands in response to this. If before hearing the story read today, if I asked you to recite to me the story of the widow's mite, who would have, at least in a rough outline form, been able to say that it has something to do with a poor old widow woman giving up her last 2 cents? Who would have been able to say that it had something to do with that? All right? That's good, yeah. Good. Okay, for the second question, I want you to be honest now. Jesus is watching, remember. Who would have included in their retelling of this story the bit right before that? The bit about the temple leaders devouring the houses of widows. Who would have included that in their telling of the story? The ex-pastor would have, Matthias would have at least. Okay, good. So this story occurs two times in the New Testament, both in Mark and in Luke, and both tellings of this story begin with this scathing critique of the religious establishment. But alarm bells should have been going off in your head, because the fact that none of you would have shared that in your recitation of that story, what that means is that the church, an institution that directly benefits from your giving, and the people whose salary comes from your giving, it means that through their sermons and their Sunday school lessons and direct mailings to you, asking you to give money to the church, they have lifted up this widow woman for you as an example of faithfulness, as an example of what it means to be committed to and to love God. And they've lifted her up as an example while all but ignoring the context in which Jesus lifts up this story. A context that happens to be a scathing critique of the way that religious institutions exploit the poor. Watch out for religious teachers, says Jesus. They walk around in their swishing robes. They walk around in their fancy stoles. They bathe in the respect that they get from the community by virtue of their position in it. They stand up in public and they recite lengthy prayers, not out of genuine love of God, but rather so that they appear pious to other people. And how do they support all those swishy robes and colorful stoles? How do they support this pious lifestyle that they're leading? They devour the houses of widows. There's no nice way to... You can't spin that phrase. You can't spin it in the Greek. You can't spin it in the English. They devour the houses of widows. So Jesus drops this carpet bomb of a critique, and immediately after, he lifts up the story of this widow. And he lifts up the example of this widow, not to say this is an example of giving that we should follow, but rather to say the temple establishment is eating widows alive, and here is a real-life example of that. He sits in the temple and he watches this widow give away her last 2 cents to drop it in the collection box out of a sense of religious obligation. And then he wraps up, he summarizes his story by saying, "Truly I tell you, All these wealthy people, they have given out of their abundance, which means they have a lot, and they gave a portion of it, but they're still doing well. But this poor widow woman, she has given everything she has to live on. And the phrase there being translated as everything she had to live on, it's one word in the Greek. It's the word bios, the word from which we get biology. It means life. The rich gave out of their abundance, gave a piece of that, but this poor widow woman gave her life. And what's more, she gave it to a corrupt religious institution. This is not a heartwarming story about a generous giver. It is a heartbreaking story about the way that religious institutions prey on the poor. And it's almost as if Mark just ripped this story from the headlines of today's paper. If you've been on Facebook the past 2 weeks, if you've been watching the news, reading the news, have you heard about the clamor around the televangelist Jesse Duplantis? You know, maybe I have a lot of religious friends, so that pops up on my Facebook feed. So apparently God was speaking to this televangelist, and he said, "Jesse, you need to purchase a $54 million jet." Now, what's important to know about Jesse Duplantis is that he already owns a private jet. But in his telling of the story, God was saying, "Jesse, your faith has plateaued, and in order to go to the next level, you need a bigger, better, faster jet to the tune of $54 million. And I think, understandably, he's come under a lot of scrutiny, has received a lot of criticism, but he's acquitted himself fairly well in public. He has a rock-solid defense for why he needs this. He says, you know, if Jesus was alive today, you better believe he wouldn't be riding around on a donkey. Jesus himself, if he were born today, he'd have a $54 million jet. And therefore, I need one of those to spread the gospel. I don't think there's any holes in that argument, right? None whatsoever. But if Jesse Duplantis was just going to the millionaires among his followers and saying, "Hey, could you throw in a million here, you know, 50 grand there?" I don't think anyone would think twice about what he was doing. But the truth about his ministry is that he preaches the prosperity gospel. So what he does, he gets on TV, he looks in the camera, and he says, "If you are struggling financially, if you are drowning in debt, if you are the sole breadwinner in a single-parent household, if you are elderly and you're living on Social Security, send me as much money as you possibly can. Turn over your Social Security check to me. Cash or check, it don't matter. Send me your diamond earrings. If you have expensive shoes, send those to me. I'll pawn them for you. Send it in. Invest in this ministry. Plant a seed in this ministry," he says, "and God will bless you with abundance in your financial life." So you may be surprised to learn that the only person that is benefiting financially from this scenario is Jesse Duplantis himself. And a lot of his followers are going into financial ruin because of his teaching. Watch out for religious teachers, says Jesus, because they devour the houses of widows. So today's teaching from Mark about this widow giving her last 2 cents, giving her very life to a religious institution out of a sense of obligation, maybe even out of a genuine love of God. If this passage is not meant to guide how we think about and how we practice giving in our lives. And when I say giving, obviously I mean to the church, because as a practical matter, we need your money to keep our doors open. But I also mean giving more widely, like thinking about charitable giving, that portion of your income that you dedicate to people other than yourself and your families. So there's a lot of nonprofits out there doing amazing work. Digging wells and providing clean water for communities, stopping the spread of HIV in Africa. There's a lot of amazing organizations out there doing what can only be described as God's work. And I'm talking about that portion of your income, whether that's $1 or $10,000, that you dedicate to God and to neighbors. So what is a better story to guide how we think about and practice giving in our lives? I want to share with you a modern-day parable, a true story, that I think does a good job of combining two important scriptural anchors for us. One, of course, is the Great Commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then that great teaching from Matthew 6 that says, where your treasure is, so too is your heart. Who does Jesus want us to love? Jesus wants us to love God and neighbor. And how do we do that? How do we achieve that? We commit a portion of our financial life to God and to our neighbor. But over at the outdoor church, which if you don't know, Church for Homeless Folks, meets at 9 a.m. over at Porter Square, outside, right in front of the T station. Folks gather in a semicircle around an altar. And every week there's a guy who shows up to service, who I'm going to call Kevin, for the sake of anonymity. And Kevin has come faithfully to this service for years, almost a decade he's been coming. And he comes and he participates in every aspect. He prays for his family and his friends during prayer time. During the discussion around scripture, he's always offering his insights. He sings along to the hymns louder than everybody else, and also way more out of tune than anybody else. And this is coming from me, so that means something. But one day, it was about 4 years ago, Kevin showed up to service, and he had a crystal pitcher that he had purchased from a religious store somewhere in Boston. And he brought it to the service, and he gave it to us, because he wanted us to use this pitcher during communion service, put the grape juice in it and then pour it out in the middle of service. This was easily a $30, $40, $50 kind of, it's a nice, pretty pitcher that he bought for us. And so this is a church for homeless folks, right? So all the ministers, we were like, you know, it feels a little icky, you know, to receive this expensive gift from one of the congregants. So after the service, we were like, Kevin, let us pay you back for it. Thank you for getting this for us. Let us pay you back. Refused. Absolutely refused. Wouldn't hear of it. But the truth about Kevin's life at this moment in time is that 95% of the things that he does in the course of his week, it's controlled by his alcoholism. When Kevin scrapes together, he lives on the street, but when he manages to scrape together $2, he'll run to the liquor store and he'll buy a pint of ruble. And if you don't know what ruble is, good for you, but it's the super cheap vodka that they make over in Somerville. It's all over on the street, the go-to liquor on the street. But whenever he gets $2, he'll go and buy one of those. But somehow, some way, out of love of God, out of love of this worshiping community of which he is so vital a part, Kevin decided to reprioritize his life, if only for a month, and set aside a little bit at a time and pull together the money he needed to buy this crystal picture. And although his brain chemistry is telling him that he should have been spending this money elsewhere, Kevin knew where he wanted his heart to be. He wanted his heart to be with God. He wanted his heart to be with his church community. He wanted his heart to be with his brothers and sisters in that community who were there to support him through thick and thin. And so he reprioritized his life, and he committed that little bit of his finances, if only for a month, to make that happen. And while for many of us, reprioritizing our lives to commit a portion of our financial lives to God and to our neighbor may not involve ruble at all. Maybe it involves Starbucks. Maybe it means that we go to Starbucks only 3 days out of the week and not five. Right now in my own life, reprioritizing my life means that I go home and we have this horrible vinyl floor in our kitchen straight out of the 60s. Oh man, it's an eyesore. But right now we're reprioritizing our life, where we're saving up to rip out that floor, and instead we're giving a portion of our finances to support our churches, my church, my wife's church, and the nonprofits that we love in this world. And we're dealing with that eyesore. It's been there since the 60s. It's not going anywhere soon, I assume. So I don't know what that looks like in your own life. But however you choose to give, whether you're giving $1 or $10,000 to whatever charities you are, I would invite you to make Kevin the example of your giving, and not this poor widow who was exploited by a religious institution. Thanks be to God. Amen.